This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 4, IDN's Technical and Operations, held on the 25th of May, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Cheryl Langdon-Orr. Please begin.
Thank you, Terry. Cheryl Langdon-Orr for the record. And if we can just move to the first slide, that would be excellent, please. All right, while that's loading, I want to just do a little bit of administrative, but we'll start off by welcoming you all and thanking you for your time today to join us in our Work Track 4 call. It's important that we ask if you are going to be making an intervention or asking a question or making a comment, that you start off by saying your name. That makes it much easier for the record and the transcript. So at the beginning, if you wouldn't mind identifying yourself, that would be greatly appreciated. And I'd also like to ask if any of you have any update or change to your statements of interest. Not seeing anyone raise their hand, we'll move on to the interesting part of today's call, and that is our presentation and discussion about the ESSAC with Patrick Fulton. And Rubens and I greatly appreciate your time today, Patrick. It's something that we certainly are hoping will be used for our deliberations and edification. We recognise that there is an awful lot of ESSAC information out there that touches on our topics of name collisions and other matters, and we very much appreciate you giving us a helicopter view and some details and an opportunity to discuss and talk to you about some of these things. So with that, unless there's anyone else who wants to make any suggestions about our agenda today, I'm going to hand over to Patrick Fulton. Over to you.
Thank you very much. And what I will do, I will go through the slides that we have prepared from ESSAC. That explains a little bit of the things that that we already have talked about, that or so the latest issues we have talked about. If you have any questions, please raise your hand in Adobe Connect, and I will hand over and try to answer the questions. You can also type the questions in the chat room, and I will try to answer them while we go through this presentation. So the latest document, you will hear more about that later, is number 94, where we're talking about the new GTLD subsequent procedures. We have gone through the past advisories and point out the fact that we have given advice, just like you pointed out, Cheryl, on many of these kind of things. Regarding the advices that we have here in SAC 94, we have not changed anything in what we present. It is actually verbatim of what we already said. I can also say at this stage that we are working with we and ALAC are working together with ICANN board to try to get up a tracker that tracks the various recommendations and implementation of the recommendations we in ESSAC has given. And unfortunately, one can say that we in FSEC have been not very happy with giving so many recommendations that have not been implemented or even tracked. So there is now a backtrack going on to see which one of FSEC recommendations have been taken into account, which one have been ignored, etc. And that might also be something that is very important for this group to look at, because of the about 100 recommendations we have given, I think we are still looking at about half of that, 50% of those recommendations are recommendations that has not been taken into account. And what I mean by taken into account means that ICANN board or whoever we are targeting the recommendations towards, they either implement our recommendation or they decide to do something else just because they might have other ways of mitigating the risks that we are talking about, etc. So don't take for granted that our recommendations have been taken into account when you do your work. It might very well be the case that the recommendation we have given have been very highly related to whatever was dealt with in the previous, for example, the process that led to the applicant guidebook, and it might be the case that no one really evaluated our recommendation. Hopefully, this work and the cooperation with, for example, you and the way we are developing a potential new round of GTLDs is much more stable and secure, so at least we don't have any recommendation falling on the floor. So regarding the stability of the namespace, we have been discussing this for a very long time, and what we have to remember is, from our perspective, the domain namespace is the set of all possible domain names that can be assembled from a tree-structured hierarchy of individual labels. So we have a complete namespace that consists of everything possible that could be a domain name. What we have to remember is that it might be the case that this domain namespace and the DNS protocol is also used in environments that are not the global public DNS, for example, on local networks and otherwise. It might also be that we have domain names that are not used in DNS, and there might be collisions for that as well. So we have multiple sort of competing uses for domain names, and that must be taken into account when looking at what domain names actually can be used, for example, for TLDs and further down the tree. One of the problems with all of us that actually deal with domain names in detail is that it is really, really difficult to have a very rigid scope and rigid definition of domain names, because when an application sees something that might look like a domain name, it is, in fact, really hard to know for the application to know what to do, and it's very context dependent. So some examples that are of domain names that are not in the ICANN universe, which are not using the root zone that ICANN manages with the help of IANA, we have some special use names, which includes the .onion, everything that ends with .onion, .local, .example, or .invalid. The registry of special use domain names is managed by the IETF, Internet and Union Task Force, and they do have a policy process for adding things to the special use domain names. We also have some private use domain names, which end users decide to use, and they have selected to use it in their organization and within their organization, for example, .mail, .home, .corp, .lan, and others. Of course, anyone can use whatever they want, and one of the issues and that have been discussed in ICANN for quite some time is how to measure the use of this private use, and then given how much use it is that a reason for registering or not registering a TLD or not? We can see regarding private use that there actually are applications for .mail, .home, and .corp that is deferred indefinitely by ICANN board. Yes, Rubens, I see the IETF the comment about the ITF, it is the case that FSAC members are very highly participating in the ITF work. For example, Suzanne Wolf is an FSAC member that is also a working group chair. Also the case that we have Warren Kumari that is also an FSAC member and also very very active regarding this work in the ITF. So we think from FSAC perspective that we have got good cross-fertilization between the ICANN and the ITF community regarding people that work on this. And then we have some other, the third thing is othernames.bit and .gnu that are used by protocols and individuals for various purposes. So there are multiple other different sort of things than the ones in the root zone, and of course it might be a little bit unfortunate and complicated, and if it is the case that any of these things that are looks like domain names but not used as domain names are actually allocated as TLDs and added to the root zones. What we found in SAC 19, what we wrote was that conclude, which is not so hard to do, is that uncoordinated use of domain namespace in different environments can lead to ambiguity with those other environments. There might be overlap, the names might collide, etc. And it is the need, there is must be a need for coordination among these various activities. And there are more than IETF and ICANN. There are others as well that that do various different kind of sort of use of domain names. To your comment, Avery, that you could call private use squatting, that is absolutely true. It is a little bit unfortunate, though, that once upon a time, the root zone and the number of TLDs were fairly static. And when it was static, some organizations and others just started to use some of these other TLDs because there was sort of no thought about adding new TLDs. Now, when these are added, well, what to do? They are in use. If you look at the ones that are in use the most, like .mail.home and .corp, they were started to be used long before ICANN even, sort of, even before ICANN existed. So I think there are, I think I would like to refine what you said, Avery, in either malicious squatting in that case and just unfortunate use for historical reasons. But anyways, regardless, there is a fact, and we don't have any protocol police and Nathaniel regarding intent. Yes, I would say that there were absolutely no such intent originally. What was unfortunate, though, was that ICANN did not have corp mail, etc., home on the blacklist in the previous round. So it was possible for people to apply for those domain names, even though it was very well known that they were in use on the Internet, and that was very unfortunate. Further, we recommend ICANN board to take steps to establish an ambiguous and I would say predictable criteria for when a label can be and not be used as a TLD. And the question is what to do with the status on the reserve list. If you look at the applicant guidebook in the previous round, we see that the strings on that list is very arbitrarily selected. The question is why some strings are there. There is also a question why some strings are not there. And the fact that there have been some part of the evaluation might have been some unpredictability is what, from FSAC perspective, we believe is something that has created quite a lot of stress. It is also the case that the use of private use, like home, corp, and mail, for example, there is a need to actually have those kind of TLDs that you just use locally, and IETF has no real interest in allocating that because IETF don't really want to touch whatever can and cannot be in the root zone. So this is what I think the biggest task is to synchronize between ICANN and IETF on who is decided on what regarding what can be registered and not as a TLD. very complicated. And I think that when I look at various individuals that work with both IETF and ICANN, the individuals that understand the sensitivity of deciding what can, for example, not be a TLD, people run away really quickly because that decision-making process is extremely delicate. ESSAC has not said anything about who ESSAC believe should be deciding what can go in the root zone or not, for example, regarding private use. The only thing we say is that the overlap between these various uses is unfortunate, and when I can come up with a policy for what can be a TLD, that must be taken into account, regardless of how that is done. And it's also important for ICANN to come up with as predictable policy and evaluation criteria as possible before adding new TLD names, so we don't get, because we believe from ESSAC perspective that it has been a little bit too much ad hoc. It can be better than what was the previous round. If we then move over to internationalized domain names, because that was the previous was just generic namespace management issues, if we look at internationalized domain names, it is even more complicated, because I think the overarching issue with internationalized domain names is that how they are used, what they are viewed as, how they are interpreted, and that includes when you compare strings, what is equal and not, which has to do with confusability, that is very much context dependent when you look at internationalized domain names. The more you dig into various scripts, the more complicated it ends up being. Specifically, as we have these sort of confusing rules traditionally in IETF, which, for example, case insensitivity, etc., which is a nightmare with internationalized domain names. And also the definition of Unicode also creates a sort of the large problems. Because of all of those and many others, we in ESSAC are recommending two overarching principles for internationalized domain names. The first one is conservatism, and the other one is inclusion. Regarding conservatism, we do believe that for internationalized domain names, because of all of these problems, it's very important to start with saying that no internationalized domain names can be allowed at all. And then you add only or allow only the characters and labels, which means combination of characters, that you have decided are safe, or rather do not create too high risk. So you should be conservative, because it is not possible to remove or make a character illegal after you said it's okay to use it. And inclusion means that you should only add things when you decided that it's actually okay. So the best thing is, of course, to, for example, before adding a new script or a subset of a script or a new class of characters, for example, that there is, to start with, you say no, and then you can have a sunrise period or something where you decide to how to make those new code points available. The third principle has to do with stability, and that has to do with the rate of change. And this is similar to what we in ESSAC said regarding addition of TLDs, and also addition of DNSSEC and other kind of thing. And that is that it is wrong to say that the root zone or the DNS cannot handle a certain number of strings or certain things or whatever it is. What we do have issues with is to make too large changes at the same time. So one should look at the stability and include things in a careful manner. And this is what we have been, what has been reflected in IDN guidelines from ICANN for as long as we have been using domain internationalized domain names. We in ESSAC have also been talking about them. We have given that as input to the ICANN root zone label generation rules. We also have that as principles for the CCNSO policy development, the EPSRP, and we continue to repeat these as a general recommendations. What we have been talking about in number eight, in SAC 88, is that we do believe that confusability leads to security, and we have had discussions and we have seen statement by some people in ICANN that think that security and confusability are two different things. We don't agree with that. We do believe that confusability leads to security issues. There was, regarding the IDN CCTLD fast track, a little bit unfortunate naming of some of the modules used in the evaluation, where security was one and confusability another one of the modules. Because of that, some people think that there is new security issues regarding confusability, but we say that phishing and other social engineering issues is definitely SSR-related issues. We also believe that there is a need for greater harmonization regarding confusability calculations and also stability and inclusion algorithms between CCTLDs and GTLDs. We do see today the LGR using some process. We see the Trademark Clearinghouse use some other comparison and confusability rules. We see the CCTLD fast track use some. We now see the proposed EPSRP rules on the CC side use some other rules. And then we see that the evaluation regarding IDNs in the GTLDs use some other kind of rules. And it would be good if there is some harmonization between all of those processes. We are in SAC looking at these harmonization issues and try to sort of conclude what the actual risks are and how to mitigate them. But we don't have any conclusion yet. What we do feel is that sort of we have the feeling that this is not a good thing if something is viewed as non-confusing in one of these processes and confusing in another one. We are specifically concerned over the fact that the Trademark Clearinghouse uses a different comparison confusability rules than others in the GTLD spectrum, because that we are lucky that we have not had any issues there. But regarding IP, it's intellectual property that's a pretty dangerous thing. There is a question in the chat regarding what the motivation may be for many thousand private person entity to squat. Well, the thing is that whenever you have a private use, you might get leakage out of your own environment, of your own context. And if only you do it as one or two, well, then it only hurts you. And maybe that is not a problem for the internet as a whole. But on the other hand, if you have lots of use of local use, then of course you create a problem and harm for the internet as a whole. Like SAC has been talking about HomeandCorp, .belkin, and a few other of these TLDs, which have been used globally. That is really not really a something that is sort of intentionally created. It's just bad planning. Bad luck when they were thinking, or whatever one should call it. Regarding the TMCH, we in SAC do have lots of discussion with TMCH people, and there have been some clarifications made, but unfortunately we also believe that it's the different entity, TMCH, registrar, etc., that do the calculation of variance. So there are multiple other kind of issues with TMCH, so there's not much you can do now about it, but it is as it is. We in SAC might actually talk a little bit more about that later on, but we are more nervous at the moment of harmonization more than TMCH itself. On slide 12, here is one example of something that we are very, very concerned over, and that is the fact that we still have people that talk about using the old version of internationalized domain names, IDNA 2003 or some other sort of home-invented version, instead of using IDNA 2008 that have been around at least since 2010. I think the naming of these IDNA standards, and by the way, I'm the author of one of the main documents, I think the naming of these documents is similar to the Microsoft Windows version numbers. Just unfortunate. I see in the chat some questions about TMCH. Please include the ESSAC support, Steve, in those discussions, because he has been the bridge between ESSAC and TMCH. So on this picture, what you see here is to the left what the client is looking up, and on the top you see four columns that are collapsed to three regarding what is registered. So if we start looking at the top, it might be the case that you register two different domain names, Strasse with a sharp S or with double S, using IDNA 2003, and then when you use IDNA 2008. You see in the first row, you see what actually ends up on in the DNS zone. If you use IDNA 2003, you cannot get Strasse with a sharp S in the root zone. So in reality, you get three different strings, or two different strings, but three different sort of columns regarding Strasse. If it is the case that you then, as a client, look up Strasse with a sharp S, first row, with a double S, and then sharp S and double S. If you do that according to IDNA 2003 and 2008, you see that you might get a correct connection, you have a false negative. But the dangerous thing is up to the right, which is what we call false positive. That is the ability for someone, if someone is registering a domain name according to IDNA, but the client is looking up according to IDNA 2003, it might be the case that you have a phishing attack just because of the incompatibilities between 2003 and 2008. This is something that ESSAC, we think, is very unfortunate that we have not seen a faster push towards use of IDNA 2008. The libcurl library is now 2008 at last after some very hard work, but it would be good if more people move to strictly IDNA 2008, because there are some messy issues that might happen there. Then something that is new, that you are actually the first ones that get to know about this. This is not known publicly. There is nothing secret. We actually yesterday we concluded we are finished and agreed with a document on emojis in domain names, and have concluded that we have a recommendation to the ICANN board to reject any TLD that includes emoji. Let me just say, first of all, that emojis are not allowed according to IDNA 2008. So if it is the case that people use IDNA 2008, then this is not a problem whatsoever. The problem is that we do see some CC TLDs that do allow registration of domain names domain names with emojis, and which means that they are violating IDNA 2008. So one can then ask, of course, why do ESSAC publish a document that tells people why they should not use something that is violent with IDNA 2008? There are a lot of emoji fans out there, and we got enough questions from ESSAC why we think this is a bad thing, so we decided that there should be a document about it. So anyways, we asked ICANN board to reject any TLDs that includes emojis, and by the way, anything else that is not valid in IDNA 2008, and then we use the sort of inclusion principle, etc., that we talked about. We also strongly discourages registration of any domain name that includes emoji in any of the labels of the DNS, and we advise registrants of domain names with emojis that they may not function consistently or be universally acceptable. So there are, of course, registrants out there that have been, through advertisements or whatever, have been told that they should register domain name with emoji because it's the best thing since sliced bread. What we are saying is that it might not work working the way that whoever sold the domain name to the registrant believe. What we should remember, though, which we point out in this document that will be available, thank you very much for that information, Julie, what we point out is that, for example, if you have a link in an HTML document, you can, of course, have whatever Unicode text you want, that is sort of the text that is displayed, so that you click on that and end up on a domain name. What we talk about is the actual domain name itself. That should not be an emoji. So that's all that those were the slides on the issues I wanted. I was thinking of bringing up today, and that leaves some time for questions and hopefully some answers from my side.
Sure, I'm going to go for the record here. And thank you very much, Patrick. And certainly, I'm sure we all feel quite privileged getting the emoji information hot off the presses. And I hope you noted the full disclosure that Ruben's made in the chat, that he's not a fan of using emoji into main names, but like me, couldn't resist doing the smiley faces or sad faces, possibly just to stir you up. Let's take a cue now if anyone has any particular questions that they'd like to make as interventions now. And just raise your hand and we'll start our discussion and interaction in terms of Q&A. But let's also just make sure that we captured everything out of the chat. And Rubens, I might just ask you to take over at this point and manage the discussion and Q&A part of today's call. Over to you, Rubens.
Thank you, Cheryl. Can people hear me?
Yes, we can. Loud and clear.
Thank you. If you could move back the slides to the slide 6 or 7, I don't remember which slide was the one mentioned, .bit and .dot. You know, it was actually 5. So, Patrick, considering the mentions you have here for .bit and .gnu, would you recommend those strings not to be offered in new GTLD subsequent procedures, or would you qualify them as quarters, as someone taking advantage of the process?
We in FSAC don't we don't make any statement on specific strings unless there are some very specific reason for it. We have made a statement on .belkin, .mail, corp, and home, and then we have pointed out, for example, various different kind of sticks that talks about how much these various domain names or these various labels are in use. It looks like domain names. Regarding bit and GNU, those are proposals that are floating around in the IETF, and from our perspective, it is very important for ICANN, and we FSAC do believe in the PDP in ICANN. It's very important that ICANN take into account the fact that we do have these various proposals floating around, and the question is then what to do about it. The Internet Architecture Board, they have for the .homenet proposal, they, IB, they said that if it is the case that someone really wants something that looks like a domain name that might leak and be used as a domain name, at least at point in time of lookup, it should be subdomains of .arpa. So the HomeNet working on, instead of the TLD or something that looks like a TLD HomeNet, we are looking at HomeNet.arpa instead. Now, the question is, what is going to happen with .bit and .gnu? I have no idea whether that is something that also should go under .arpa, whether it will be used, or whether .bit and GNU should be TLDs, or whether they should just be blocked and people should be allowed to use it. And I'm not going to make any draw any conclusions myself. And even if you do it on these two and come up with some kind of data, it's still the case that you will have the same similar kind of issues with other strings that people are going to use for other kind of things. So it's just something that needs to be taken into consideration when the PDP, when sort of the application evaluation process is starting.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick. I have another question, but I'll defer for a question from the chat from Nathaniel Edwards. He asked if I can have taken any action in response to recommendation 7 of SAC 66, which said that ICANN should in due course publish information about not yet disclosed issues regarding name collision risks.
ICANN have published some more data in the, if I remember correctly now on top of my head what this is, they have published they have published more information in the GET, the final report, there is some more data about the name collision issues. And yes, that was pretty nasty. We don't think it was from SAC that was that nasty, so it could not be published. But anyways, the issue sort of still exists. So some more work has been done. Regarding namespace collision issues, one thing that we in SAC do think is unfortunate is that we suggested that when you register when you want a TLD and is to be allocated in the root zone, for name collision issues, there is a requirement for the registry to register certain domain names and refer them to 127.0.53.53. We suggested a different resolution mechanism where statistics could be collected regarding lookups and use of domain names so that it would be possible to actually collect some more statistics that one could then draw conclusions from. ICANN decided that for privacy reasons and a few other things, that should not happen. Instead, we have this 127.0.53.53 solution. So regarding statistics and collision, ICANN did choose a different path than FSAC. I'm not saying that the ICANN path is worse or than FSAC. I'm just saying that with the FSAC solution, we would have known a little bit more about name collision issues, specific on the second level domain, but we are where we are. And FSAC do believe that ICANN could publish a little bit more data than what FSAC is publishing. We also believe that ICANN could gather more data than what ICANN is gathering, but that also requires changes in the registrar agreements, and that's not easy, of course.
Thank you, Patrick. Next question is from Avery Doria. She asks whether .bit and .gnu could be subject to the RFC 6761 process.
I don't really know whether they can. If I understand, for example, .bit more, how that one works, they are using DNS. The DNS protocol is sort of a little bit more than, for example, .onion do, because .onion, that is something that is only supposed to be used sort of in the onion routing protocol in Tor. So you should never, ever see something with .onion in the DNS. Of course, you still see that because people try to use onion domain names when they are not in, when they don't have a Tor client installed. Regarding .bit, I think that is something that actually could be used also as domain names, although locally, just like home. So I don't really know, and that is of course a question for the ITF to answer. And if I understand correctly, and Avery, you probably follow the ITF better than I am, specifically Rubens do, ITF is a little bit reluctant to add things to the special registry, just because that might, as far as I heard, that could definitely be a denial of the ICANN root zone allocation mechanism, just because ICANN is probably expected to say that if something is in the special use registry, it cannot be a TLD. That is probably one of the simpler rules, but that also implies that ITF should be very careful of adding things to the special names register.
Thank you, Patrick.
Let me just add one more thing. Home Mail and Corp, there have been an internet draft that suggests adding Home Mail and special names registry, and that was rejected.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. Now that we clear the queue, I have a question from me regarding IDNs. Reading the full FX recommendations and these lines you mentioned, I got the impression that for ICANN to follow that advice, a new process would require a full exhaustive list of every code point that could be applied to. Do you agree with that assessment?
Patrick, if you're speaking, I
can hear you properly. You are mute.
Sorry, I was muted. Thank you very much. So the answer is both yes and no. We do have the label generation panels that look at, for every script, they look at the characters script by script, and they look at the code points that are allowed according to IDNA 2008, and they look at the confusability and what subset of the characters that can be used in DNS according to IDNA standard, and they say which ones they do believe are safe to use. So I think the LGR panels and then the integration panel that merged the proposals from the various LGR panels is the right path forward. So lots of this work that looks like monumental is already done. What I personally would like to see is, for example, recognition of the LGR work, and regardless of what you think the LGR work, whether that is good or bad, which means improvements of the LGR work is one thing, but then when that is done, that could be, for example, reused in other places, for example, in TMCH and in the CC process and wherever. So I think the first good step that could be done in ICANN is to sort of reuse the various building blocks that already exist for IDN.
Thank you, Patrick. I see no further hands raised. No, we just had one comment from Cook Fund that .yon has a commercial use with Tor as opposed to .local. Could this be a point of differential? It does not qualify .yon special use. The problem is that ITF already ruled on that, qualifying .yon with special use. So whether we disagree with that or not is now history. So seeing no other questions, I send this back to Cheryl for continuing our work. Thank you, Patrick, for joining our call today.
Thank you, Rubens, and thank you very much, Patrick, Cheryl Langdon, for the record. I would like to think, Patrick, that with anyone who is reviewing today's meeting later on by the transcript record and the recordings, if they have particular questions that we become aware of on our work team list, if we could pass those through to you from via Julie, perhaps, that you may be able to find some time for a reaction or a response. If so, that would be appreciated, because we certainly want to make sure that we take into account and have a good understanding of FSAC positions on the points of topic that our work team is engaged in, recognising, of course, that we may also need to, at some point, assist in the education and upskilling, shall I put it that way, of the wider PDP working group, because, of course, we're just a small part of the volunteer pool that is focusing on the particular issues of the more technical type and of the IDNs as well. I am also aware that Avery is in another meeting while she is with us, so I just want to check, because the next agenda item does involve her, if she's got her audio connected, and because she's raising her hand with perfect timing, she is indeed. So let's go back to the previous slide deck and put up a little placeholder prettiness for Avery to give us an update. And Patrick, as we move on to our more mundane parts of our agenda, we want to thank you very much and say how much we value the time and energy you've put into working with us today. And obviously, if you want to escape from us, you're more than welcome to do so now. But if you want to hang around and listen to the rest of our call, that's fine too. But I suspect you'll want to escape. So thank you very much. I'm certainly putting up a little round of applause. And with that, we'll move to Avery. Thank you, Avery.
Thank you. This is Avery speaking. Hopefully I can be heard. I was going to cover two things. One, the customary, you know, what's happening in the full group, just to make sure that everyone is caught up, because not everyone from the subgroups participate in the full group. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about the process going forward in the subgroup we've been talking about in the leadership group. So in terms of the full group, what we did at our last meeting was we took one of the three pending issues that we created drafting teams on and went through in some detail the base document that was produced for us by staff in terms of that. So basically what we were talking about was, being in two meetings at once can be very confusing. But basically talking about, I believe it was categories that we went through, and talking about the issues, looking at the table, looking at how we're taking that issue, looking at the fact that that issue is both an application issue and a contract issue, and looking at the attributes. And then after that, we had a fairly good conversation on the list. On that, though, that big conversation did drift into one of the other pending issues we have, is are we doing another round? Are we doing a progression of shorter rounds? Are we moving to a first-come, first-serve, either immediately or sometime in the future? And that discussion got blended in, as many of the overarching issues do. So our plans going forward is we will take the other two of those issues, the one that deals with predictability, flexibility, and the effect of community engagement during the application process, which is a drafting team. And I think that one will be on our schedule as one of the discussion points at our next meeting. And the one on rounds or first come, first serve or what. So those will come into the full meeting and have a discussion, and then hopefully the drafting teams will go away, take that and start working us towards a recommendation, because we really do need to complete, having completed the discussion of comments, we need to come up with what we process we're in, says there is a policy, there is an implementation, we need to make specific decisions on whether you're recommending a change to those. But at the bottom, there always is a policy and an implementation already. So that was the first thing in terms of what went on in the last meeting. And I asked people to look at that discussion and to look at those things. The other issue has to do with how the work of the subteams, of the work tracks, continues. We've pretty much in all of these have done an initial pass. I call that pass the blue sky pass. Jeff has called that pass the pros and cons pass. It's basically been discussions of the issues involved in each of our 32 plus specific issues that we have to resolve. We came up with the CC2 comments, and that comment period has closed. Staff is currently now working on their synthesis and bucketing and all the magic that they do to sort of make the comments tractable. for us to work on. So the next pass in each of the sub-teams would be looking at those comments, comparing them to the discussions we've had, resolving what perhaps can be resolved, if we notice things that are really hard issues, perhaps even sending those issues to the full meeting for a more fulsome discussion with more people and continuing discussion at that point. And basically making a pass through all of the issues again, doing the comment review, analysis, etc. Then after that one's completed, and each of the work tracks is, you know, somewhat on its own schedule, so everybody won't be at the same state in these cycles as everyone else. The third pass will be, having done that, then go back, look at each of the issues and ask the question, do we have a consensus for recommending a change to this? And do we have a consensus for what that change might be? And answering those questions, where they can be answered in the work track, get that documented as part of what goes forward to the full team, where there are intractable issues, documenting those, sending them to the full group perhaps for discussion, or at least documenting the sides of intractability. After that's finished, each of the work tracks will have a report of basically, on our issues, this is what we came to. Then they start to be gathered in the full group in terms of producing our initial recommendations that would go out for review. So at a certain point, everything would get sent off to the full group and get aggregated. The sub-teams won't necessarily cease to exist. It's quite possible that after discussion on an issue, one of the work tracks could be, and pardon me for sometimes saying sub-team, sometimes saying work track, the different terminology in different groups trips me up. But basically, we may come back to a work track saying, could you please dig into this a little bit more and you know, give us some more ideas. But by and large, the main work of the work tracks should be done, because then we'll produce the initial recommendations. Those will go out for comment, and we'll have to resolve those comments. You know, I hope we have just one comment with draft, but we could have more. We'll see what happens. So just basically to give an idea of how we're going on, what kind of sort of cycling through the processes, through the issues within the work tracks they can accept, and a couple more minutes if people needed to, you know, ask any questions for clarification. Those of you that are in multiple groups will hear this that this conversation frequently, and it may progress, and of course we'll bring it to the full group and make sure that, you know, there's a general acceptance of this as a process going forward. So that's what I had.
Sure, Langdon, for the record, thank you very much, Avery. I'll get to hear it a few times, but that's okay. I'll watch as it develops. But it is very important, as you say, for all of us in the various work tracks to be up to date with this forward planning. To that end, that takes us nicely, and I'm just looking, I don't think anybody has got any questions for you by the looks of it, but if some come in, obviously we'll pass them on. That takes us rather nicely to our last slide, which is our wrapping up set of points on today's agenda, and that will be our next meeting. Our next meeting, which will be before many of us are travelling to Johannesburg for the ICANN 59 meeting, will be on the 8th of June, and that's going to be at 2000 UTC. So our next meeting for this work track is 2000 UTC on the 8th of June. far more social time for me in Australia than the 2 a.m. that it is almost now, but certainly not so social for many other parts of the world. So do appreciate with the time rotation that we're trying to share the pain. I'd like to call for, and also just on next meetings, there's some background noise going on, so I apologise for that. If you're not speaking, if you could mute your lines, that would be appreciated. The meetings after Joburg will be continuing on our cycle until the parts of the next process that Avery outlined kick in, and we'll start those in post-Joburg with the usual invitations going out and agenda items trying to be forecasted as best as possible. But at least our work team has stuck its toe in the water and had some preliminary discussions for all of the particular topics that we are mandated to look at, and I think that's a very good thing. Before Johannesburg, it was a desire for all of the work teams to be in that position, and whilst we haven't finalised our recommendations and nor are we ready just yet, but we shall hopefully will be in short order after Johannesburg to take things back to the full plenary. We have at least had one run through of the topic so far. Is there any other business that anyone would like to raise now? Not hearing anyone or seeing anyone in the chat or raising their hand. We'll assume that there's no any other business for today. The action items out of today's call obviously include our encouragement for everyone else in our work track to take the time, indeed anyone else in the full PTP work group, to take the time to review the transcript and listen to the recording of today's call with Patrick's presentation and the Q&A that went on associated with us, but also to raise awareness of the excellent reading list that we put out prior to today's call. It did get copied to the list, but do refresh your memories on the details of the FAC advisories to date, but we'll also be expanding that now with the additional ones. We put out that work, that reading track, before the latest SAC 94 came out, and of course there'll be an emoji one that we'll need to add shortly, but I'm sure Julie and the rest of our terrific staff will have their finger on the pulse of that and update not only our wiki record, but our reading list as well. So with that, with about a minute to the top of the hour, just looking at what Julie was saying in fine print, unfortunately, on my tablet. Yes, there she is. Yep, yes, just agreeing that she's going to add 95 and 94. Obviously, the work once we have all of the responses, I think there's still one or two coming in the next day or so to CC2, will be one of the primary pieces of work as we move on to our next calls. So with that, I'd like to ask Rubens, is there anything he wants to add before we wrap up? Not from me. Excellent, Rubens. Okay, well, it'll be another fortnight, another time, and continuing conversation, including continuing our conversation on the important issues that we have in terms of name collisions. I note one question that we will want to forward to Patrick was about the 1,000 names going into the route at any one time. That's a question that wasn't raised during our call, but I think I've heard that as an issue from other members of, if not this work track, then also the wider working group. So perhaps, Julie, if you can make sure we grab that as a follow-up question and take any other follow-up questions to him. Top of the hour now, so thank you, staff, and thank you one and all for joining us today. This meeting is now coming to an end, and bye for now.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.